This week on The Droids, we've waited decades, and finally, we have a Star Wars TV series on Disney Plus to watch, review, and talk about endlessly. All of that, only Mando, this week on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, Ryan, and Sam, I am Mike, and we just watched the first episode of The Mandalorian, and we cannot contain ourselves. We have so much to say. We had to get together and do an in-person live podcast. Now, this isn't live to you, but it's live to us right now, which means we can see each other's reactions.
That's right. That's
we
right.
get to know if a joke works
exactly.
or not just by staring at each other's eyes.
It's almost...
I watched Captain Corelli's Mandolin. Is that not... What's,
oh,
the,
no.
what's the show
oh,
wait, you're wait. Supposed to watch?
Oh, no.
I just got a call. I got a call. Someone's looking for a Mando.
Oh.
A Mando hug and kiss. And I just wrote, hey, whoever you are, that's cool. Love who you love.
Come on up.
Yeah. You can get that now.
Everybody's welcome.
I assume that's how phones work, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's an intercom.
You're talking I only have a Nextel two-way.
The intercom dialed in, so that was it.
Anyway, so Joe and Brian were flying to Boston, right?
Yeah, we got there.
There it
already.
Is.
Hey.
There it is. Check mark.
Woohoo!
Check mark.
Lowell had forgotten to check the.
We've satisfied our new wings quota.
You know, in the last episode, we wondered whether or not there was a Wings crossover. I'm wondering whether or not there's ever been a mention of Star Wars in an episode of Wings.
Oh.
That you're doing the rewatch,
I'm going
Ryan,
through,
right now.
So I'll let you know. I'll keep you posted.
There's no way there
I'll
can't
also
be.
I'll also let you know if there's any Star Wars alum that show up.
Oh, I'm sure there is. You know, very surprisingly, Matthew Fox is in an episode of Wings.
Really?
That is surprising. I heard that Alec Guinness might show up in season 6, but I haven't gotten there yet.
As a ghost?
As Antonio's father. He's doing a very broad Italian accent.
I really thought that I would be the one to keep on bringing up Wings on this show, but it's been Ryan. And
I should
I'm
say,
very
I don't
pleasantly
think anyone
surprised.
Would be offended, but I'm part Italian, so like it was fine that I did that.
It works. Who from Wings do you think... Predictions. We've now seen episode 1 of The Mandalorian.
Yes.
So which actor from Wings do you think is going to be in this season?
Tony Shalhoub.
Oh, the Hackett brothers.
You're going with both.
You're going with Stephen Weber and Tim Dale.
No, Hackett brothers as Gold 2 and Gold 4.
Yeah, exactly. Flag
that's what I want.
The only logical answer would be Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah.
But you know what? If a Crystal Bernard shows up,
I think Shalhoub's the most obvious answer. But
well,
I
remember
mean,
him
Tom's,
in Men in Black.
Tom's
that's
in Church.
Basically.
Oh yeah,
he could fit. He could fit into this world.
Yeah.
Hey man, if Nick Nolte fit in,
yeah.
MVP award. By
I
the way.
Truly think
Ooh,
I was most.
We haven't even gotten to it yet.
Yeah, I was most engaged in those scenes. Yeah. Oh, we should. Before we even say, did we already say there's spoilers all over this?
There'll be spoilers if you've not watched episode 1 of The Mandalorian. Which really, what are you doing with your time if you haven't? Do you have a life? Do you have work, family, commitments?
Do you have a life day?
Life day.
Because we have none of those. And if we do, some of us do, we're shirking those responsibilities.
Very much so.
That's fine.
That's what
just
you do.
Left the faucet on.
A lot of
babies watch themselves. They're resilient.
Babies watching.
I think if we learned anything from this episode of The Mandalorian, babies do watch themselves for 50 years.
Oh, wow.
Whoa. But don't worry. I've spoken about my dog on the podcast. The dog is babysitting Mike's baby. We're fine.
We've seen that all work out very well in past previous fictional stories of dogs watching babies.
Yes, like that Tiny Toons.
No? Yeah.
No.
Okay, I love you. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Nobody?
Oh, okay. That's isn't that Animaniacs?
I'm pretty sure it was Tiny Toons, but maybe
was
it was
Animaniacs.
Yeah,
it was
Animaniacs.
You know what? I think those are all a shared universe. It doesn't matter. Don't worry about it.
On Disney Plus, there's a lot. We were talking lots of tunes today.
But you think the Warner Brothers and sister on the Disney Plus, this guy. Anyway, welcome to the Lady and the Tramp cast.
Disney owns everything. They might buy Warner Brothers soon enough. I wouldn't be surprised. So the day started with Disney Plus launching, 6 a.m. Eastern time.
Yep.
People got up and watched it. None of us watched The Mandalorian at 6 a.m.
We
I watched one minute.
I logged
we wanted
in.
To watch it together.
I logged in at 6 a.m. because I forgot my password, and I was a little nervous that the servers were going to go down, so I was like, I got to get that password.
You know, I actually talked to someone today, though, who is a very big Star Wars fan, who said, it's amazing you need to say to everybody on the podcast that you all waited to watch the episode together. Right.
Yeah, we did.
It means a lot, and it means a lot to each of us to watch it together.
It does.
It's special tonight.
It's a momentous occasion.
I don't know if that's true for all of us, but like I have a 10 a.m. start at my office, and I work a 10-minute walk from where I live, so I was just killing time this morning. I actively was like, I'll wait, you know, so it was great. I wouldn't have wanted to experience this any other way.
That being said, Friday, I'm watching it by myself.
Oh, yeah, you guys.
Oh, well, we all
won't even remember your names.
You guys can all screw off.
I'll probably watch the first episode, too, just to erase this one.
Just to forget this. Yeah.
Just a fresh start. Just something nice.
Well, as we get into our Mandalorian conversation, again, follow us on social media. Twitter, Droids Pod, Instagram, Droids Pod, Facebook, The Droids Podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes or any podcast aggregator where you get your favorite podcast, Stitcher, Audio Boom.
iHeartRadio.
iHeartRadio. We're on Spotify.
We're on Spotify.
You can find us everywhere.
And YouTube then you can YouTube us. That's what I was just going to mention, Sam. Soon, Ryan will be playing through Jedi Fallen Order, which comes out next week as well.
No,
wow.
It comes out
this
Friday.
This week. Oh, my
Chris,
gosh.
I don't know if you listen to any
of these
podcasts. I thought
people would be listening to this
first
in the past.
First videos.
You were on the podcast where it's told to me.
First playthroughs will be going up this weekend.
I just cannot believe
it. And then I will be getting, you know, some kind of schedule going.
Well, this is, maybe I'll come hang.
So come to the YouTube channel.
Cool? That's cool, man.
Droids Pod on YouTube.
YouTube Droids
Pod. So you can also listen to our episodes there, too.
Great chance to check out everything the droids have to offer. We're going to have a whole lot more. We will get to each episode of The Mandalorian. I think there's, you know, a lot of schedules going on. We may not commit to every episode having an immediate reaction for the next day. Some of us, maybe myself, just wants to record one on my own after watching each episode. I think everyone's down to listen to that, right? You want to listen to me talk for 30 minutes with no one else?
Honestly, I absolutely would, Mike.
Yeah. Mike wants to Bogart the pod.
The special Mike episode.
Well, I do bring the mixing board, and I do have the controls.
So yeah, he has all the microphones. I don't know what to do.
What is this, a Wednesday night episode of Wings? I don't know what that means.
It means just Mike watching.
Just me
watching.
On another episode of the Mike you've been looking for.
I just want to say that just to highlight how different TV ratings were in the 90s, and Wings wasn't a top 20 show, and it had more viewers on average than the premiere of Game of Thrones. That's how many people were watching linear television.
What else were you doing?
Oh, man.
What else were you doing?
It was Wednesday. Yeah. What else were you going to watch? Dharma and Greg?
I was going to make a reference to like, wow, that's more than Breaking Bad, but more than Game of Thrones. That's
more than the premiere of Game of Thrones.
That's crazy.
That's insane. Our fragmented culture right now.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, tough.
We could all, and you know what? At least in the 90s, we could all agree on one thing. Wings. It was that Helen's cooking was bad. And Roy was a blowhard.
All right.
Every Friday, I'm standing by the water cooler, starting countless conversations. Nobody wants to talk to me. Everybody's like, go sit down. Do some work.
Did you watch Wings last night? No.
All right. Well, for those of you who are new to the podcast, looking for a podcast about The Mandalorian, thank you for listening through our constant ramblings on Wings.
You're assuming they haven't left.
I know. Somehow they're still around. I appreciate those of you who've hung around.
Yes.
A big tip of our cat to you, and for those of you who have not heard that before, we do that a lot in this pod.
Kind of our thing.
Yep. And to the alien civilizations listening to this right now.
We are shooting this into space.
So let's get to it. Here it is.
Catch up to the Voyager soon.
The Mandalorian conversation. I think before we get into any specific details, what did it feel like watching a Star Wars TV series? What was going through your head? I said it after the end of the episode. I don't even remember anything that happened because there was just so much joy in my heart to watch an original Star Wars TV show and know that these 40 minutes that we saw were just the beginning, and I'm getting so much more over the next 8 weeks. I don't know. I'm ecstatic.
So the first thing I thought watching it was, is Chris's hand going to be on my knee the whole time?
Again, I'm sorry about that. I'm an easy scare, and I just need something to hold on to.
No, it was like, you know, it snuck up on me in terms of what this actually meant for Star Wars. Because, as we said in the last pod, or maybe two pods ago, but anyway, there's been such a saturation of Star Wars in the last few years, which is very exciting, but it makes it so that, like, this has a different impact than this if this came out right after episode 3. But you know, being with the droids, it really dawned on me, at least, like, whoa, this is the live action Star Wars show. And it's happening. That's what I was thinking. And then I had a lot of other thoughts that we'll get into.
Yeah, I think I guess the thing was it really delivered in the sense of it was so exciting to have new Star Wars, and it reinforced for me all of the trappings of Star Wars, particularly the vision, like the iconography of Star Wars is what this affirmed for me is the thing that draws me the most to Star Wars, I think. I'm a very visual person. You know, I'm an artist, and I think, like, and obviously it's movies, it's visual storytelling, but that's the first thing. And it's like they chose a character who's known for his visible iconography, like the silhouette he cuts. And I was like, this looks cool. I like looking at it. So I also would echo then what you guys have said, that it's like, this has been a long time coming. This has been rumored. This has been myth for a long time. And so to live in that reality and be able to share with you guys was really cool.
My first thought was, how long do I keep my hand there? Do I move it? Is it weird if I move it too soon? I didn't know quite what to do there. But I think that for me, I love any time in Star Wars where you can break new story that's in between pieces of Star Wars. So it's like there's built-in question marks in every Star Wars movie and Star Wars show, and you want to know, you kind of want to know, what's this story like? And if they can do it in a way that's not just like exposition, which I believe this is, it's like a story that kind of reveals the universe that fills in those gaps. And so I'm like super excited to see what they're going to do, especially in this time frame where I know we've had a little bit with like Rebels and a little bit with like that kind of thing, but it's not as visual and it's not as like tied to the actual world as this show is. So to see a live action Star Wars show, I'm elated. It's been on the brain forever.
Exploring more of the world. I mean, the show has little pieces in here that have given us the idea of what we've seen before. But I think the first thing I want to start with is, what was your favorite minor reference to something we knew before? And the thing that I think of first is just, there was a Life Day mention. Mm-hmm. They mentioned Life Day in this episode, right, which really the holiday specials have been buried. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And here we have a Life Day reference relatively early on. There were several others. We saw kind of what the anteater alien that early on in the episode. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We had the door droid that gave him entrance into C. Werner Herzog character. There were several touch points like that, but what was your favorite kind of minor bit there that referenced something else that we've already known?
So this, for me, this isn't quite a minor bit, but in terms of following that door droid thing, when he goes to meet Werner Herzog's character and there's like four stormtroopers in there, I thought that that was super evocative in terms of world building, because we know that the Empire has fallen at this point. Mm-hmm. So it was haunting to see people still being stormtroopers, because it means that there are like these underground sects that are keeping true to the Empire, which we also know probably leads to the rising of the First Order, that whole thing. So I thought that that was a very matter-of-fact way to show that, where he goes in and there's stormtroopers. They're in old, like, dirty stormtrooper gear. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of... And Werner Herzog had... I guess this is the real thing, the small thing, is he had a medal around his neck that had the Empire symbol on it. So I thought that that was a really good piece of world building that was subtle-ish, you know, if you don't know what's going on, but it kind of was rewarding us for knowing.
And even the block of money also had the little emblem.
Yes.
The Empire emblem. And it's like their gold. It's like what they've melted down.
It was Nazi gold. I mean, yeah, Nazi. Well, but
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The imagery there was like just synonyms for each other.
And I think we should state right now, none of us are experts on Mandalorian lore. Sorry, gotta do it.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a lot that's referenced to, and is it Beskar is what they use as the armor, and that's what the bit of cash or coin or whatever he gave back to him was the same that he uses for his armor. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of references to, that's great to have it back within what, the clan or within
the tribe.
The tribe.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting, because I just immediately, you know, there's a whole lot more to this story of The Mandalorian than we see, and it whets the appetite for a whole lot more to explore. But it was really interesting to watch that and be like, oh, okay, I don't know enough about this, and I'm excited to learn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also think... it's weird that we ended up on the topic of like money and credits, because that was what I was going to say was my favorite reference.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I actually thought some of the like fan references for people like the Life Day stuff, like maybe I knew to be looking for it, or maybe it was just it, that stuff didn't resonate as much. But one thing I loved was I loved that they dealt with the idea of like in an imperial collapse, the money's not valued. And so like imperial credits are devalued. And so he takes, and I can't remember what type of money, but he's given a different currency. Mm-hmm. Which was,
don't they say they're like calamari?
Yeah,
something like
that. Calamari. Yeah, yeah, calamari. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, that's a subtle reference to the Mon Calamari, then we also see that he's paid,
Watto, you know, must be losing his
credits
mind.
By this like Beskar, like essentially the hardest currency there is, like, you know, pure gold. And so I just liked that whole world building. You know, element. I liked the money. I liked that they also physicalized credits. Mm-hmm. I don't remember, honestly, if we've seen that maybe in something I'm just not remembering. But the idea of, I mean, it's very Old West.
Good point. I don't think we've ever seen credits.
If you watch, you know, Deadwood or an Old Western, it's like you go into the bar, you buy some whiskey, and you plop down some gold coin or a little, you know, your little satchel of money. And it's like that is what he's literally doing throughout the episode. He's paying everyone off in this underworld. So.
It's interesting you say that. We do see a lot of the coin and the credits in Solo. Mm-hmm. Solo is the only other one that really has it in the middle. But
gotcha.
Yeah.
Same.
Right. Yes.
The
worst Star Wars movie.
The thing that I liked a lot was the references to the holiday special. Obviously, Life Day, but his weapon, which we've talked about before, that has already been a reveal, and then just the imagery of him like shocking that beast that kind of jumps up from the water, because there is, he does ride creatures, or Boba Fett rode creatures and things like that, and has used that to shock. And then also the homing beacon was a big part of that, the holiday special. So I love it. I love it. They got me.
I don't think I didn't know that the homing beacon was a big part of the holiday special. Interesting. Well, I think then overall, I don't know if we want to just talk overall impressions of the show, because we talked about how it felt to watch a Star Wars series, but what did we think of the first episode? I know Ryan has thoughts, and you know what? When he ends this, he's going to say, I have spoken.
Well, let me start off by saying that. So I thought it was thrilling to watch. I thought, I have to say up front, I thought that it was very good, and I enjoyed it a lot. I can't wait to continue.
Here comes the butt.
There's just, you know, listen, we can be critical here.
Of course we can. If anything, we have been critical on this podcast.
Here's something that I loved. The Mandalorian, our main character, was kind of, for the first 20 minutes or so, the first half essentially, this stoic character that we were expecting. You know, this like man of few words kind of like archetype thing. And then as soon as he entered that like Mandalorian like clubhouse essentially, and then when he started interacting with the IG unit and he's like amongst his own, meaning bounty hunters or Mandalorians, he became much more vocal and the character became much more like charming and well-rounded to me, which was surprising.
A lot more interesting.
Yes, which was surprising and a pleasant surprise. A few thoughts I had. The end credits, it just said created by Jon Favreau, which seems so strange to me because it's like, no, I understand he created the show, but, and then it said based on Star Wars by George Lucas, but saying like created by one person and it's a whole world, like
especially that was, when so much of that world's been built by the other person you're working with on.
Yeah,
show.
So I found that strange. In terms of, here's just a few critiques. I think Dave Filoni knows Star Wars so well; he knows the world. I think as a director, he has a little bit to go. This is
There's
the first
something
live action
to be desired.
Thing.
Yeah,
I think this is the first live action thing he's done, and I think that there were some things that were a little flat. It looked very television-y, which is fine, and that's my other point. And this is not a critique of the show. The show is a television show, like it should be a television show. However, I've read a lot online about people saying like it's so cinematic, things like that, blah blah blah. If anyone thinks that this is production value-wise to the level of a feature Star Wars film, they are out of their minds.
And like, I agree with you for this episode. For some reason, I'm hopeful that it gets beyond that.
To me, it's a point of like charm because I don't need everything to be a Star Wars movie. I go to the Star Wars movies for that. Well, so to see a Star Wars TV show, there was actually something charming about
it. You can tell in like, there's elements of like just ghost towns and just like the way things are just shallowly focused. It's usually a trick that you're masking, you're masking stuff. And there's a lot of that. And I do agree. I think the episode was well directed. I think everyone, like, acting was great. Everyone had motivations. Everyone was, but I think what you kind of lose, there was this kind of almost like film school aspect of cool shots in it. And so there's a lot of cool shots and that's great. But that's, I feel like that's kind of a rookie move. Like, it's like a jazz musician. Sometimes you have to let the silent beats play through rather than loading it up.
Well, I also think that if this is what the show looks like, I'm fine with that because, I found it like charming. There was things, everything was functional. There was nothing that was bad or anything. But if the show is striving to look like a Star Wars television show, I'm fine with that. But if people are doing this thing where they're saying that, it's Star Wars movies on television, it's like, no, like that's not what it is. That's not what it should be. We have the Star Wars movies for that reason. And I think that, I think that there were parts that were a little flat, but I found it just visually flat. But I found that like somewhat charming where I was it reminded me of like Firefly or something like that.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of
there's
that.
Two scenes that really stood out to me that were minor scenes, but they really felt flat. And maybe it's because you're used to watching Star Wars being shot by J.J. Abrams or by Rian Johnson.
Yeah,
or
I'm
the
curious
directors
if we have the same one. So go ahead.
It's him in the cockpit.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's exactly what I was
I was sitting there and I'm like, there's something just off about this. It's because it felt like either it wasn't, I don't know that it needed to be cut more quickly.
Yeah.
But we were just kind of sitting on the two shots of those characters, and there wasn't a whole lot there
in
the screen.
There was something strange where we could see the guy's reflection in the cockpit window, and we couldn't see the Starfield behind him.
There was no Starfield, which is weird.
That's the mark of a television show, is that there is a conversation shot in a vehicle. And that's like, because it bides time and it's inexpensive. Yeah.
To be clear, like that is one of the things. I read an article, I wish I could attribute it, I can't remember, but people were saying that everybody keeps saying that television is like, it's like movie quality now. And to me, that's like a false equivalence because equating quality of two mediums is kind of like unfair. Yeah. So what they're talking about is production value, but the form of television is inherently different. It is more dialogue focused. You have to move the story forward in a different way. So it's more plot forward that way. So when you do have two, you know, the Mandalorian sitting there in the cockpit with his bounty, the guy's kind of talking, played by Horatio Sanz, which is very cool. It is just two characters sitting in a vehicle, and that's fine. But I think it's weird that a lot of the critics of this have been effusive about how it looks like the old movies and things like that, when it's like, allow it to be something new.
Yeah.
You know, I think it feels like Dave Filoni, and as much as like it feels like an animation director making a live action thing where he was like, the camera's gonna be here and we're gonna watch the characters do this. May also be that his mentor on this was Jon Favreau, the least visually interesting director on the planet. So I actually found that to be a strength of it because it makes it distinguishes it from just being another, you know, Star Wars.
I think the Iron Man montage, though, I know Favreau didn't direct this, but I think the Iron Man montage in Iron Man is visually interesting and a very well put together sequence.
I thought you were talking about how there was the moment in this episode where it was.
That's why I bring it up. So it's like a little homage to Iron Man in that regard where he's forging the thing because it's done in the same kind of cadence.
I'm not saying he's not good at constructing movies. I just said that he's...
I thought it was visually interesting.
I would say the second scene that I was talking about was Greef Karga, where it's the first time that it's him and Carl Weathers together felt the same way.
Sure.
And but I agree with you. It didn't to me make me feel like, oh, this is awful. It just stood out to me as not having the quality of what I was expecting from a regular Star Wars. Mm-hmm. But that's not bad. That like this is a different kind of storytelling, as you said. We've never seen a story that needed to play out over 8 hours.
Right.
That wasn't 8 2-hour movies that were telling a whole story. But so there's a little bit more time and a little bit more dialogue and more scenes like that we're going to not have to, but that we will experience.
And when the writing's good, which I thought it really was, I mean, it's enjoyable to watch.
Oh, yeah.
On the notes sort of that we're talking about now in terms of like
the how cinematic it is versus, you know, like sort of, I guess the things that I felt were, on that same note, whenever, when people are talking about, and this kind of came up during Rogue One too, how much it felt like, it was, it's taking you back. It feels like Star Wars, or as some people call it, A New Hope. You know,
or as like, Disney Plus calls it,
you know, it feels like the, you know, the movie from the 70s, the movies from the 80s. I did not feel that. This to me feels very much like a piece of 2019. It also feels like it's very much set in a different part of the galaxy. We were sort of talking sort of off air via text chain. I mean, this is, or maybe I listened to your guys' episode. Maybe this was you guys talking last week. I don't know. It's a blur.
Wow.
But like about the level of violence, it's paced differently. It doesn't feel like the movie from the 70s. It doesn't look like the movie from the 70s. Mm-hmm. The characters don't even seem to talk or act like the characters from the 70s. What's similar is there's that cool Macquarie-based iconography and design. I think one thing that really helps is, and this may be also due to some limitations of making something on TV, you're not seeing digitally assisted prosthetics. It's like the characters who are in, like there's aliens who are like humanoid in form with like rubber masks that are well painted, and their mouths move in like ups and downs and puppetry, and that's awesome.
That harkens back to like Star Trek-ish kind
of
like,
honestly, finding, a lot of it. Yeah. Some of it reminded me of, not the new one, although that's phenomenal. It reminded me of like the Dark Crystal, like these old Henson things. There was that charm about it where it was, especially the Nick Nolte character, I know had CGI involved.
Did he?
I have to only
guess.
I think on the
eyes, but other than that,
I have to imagine.
I thought the eyes looked
great.
I'm
really bad at picking that out.
Yes.
But
I thought the Children of Thanos were real.
Nine feet
tall aliens. 9 feet tall blue aliens.
They're in costumes.
Mediocre CGI.
The last sort of thing. I'm blanking on it now. So go on, Mike. You have something to say.
I just want to go back to talking about directors. Is that we, and even the way this is sparsed out, we said 15 million per episode is what it was estimated at.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'm wondering if that is like, we divided the total number by 8 and got, because I don't think this first one was $15 million. It didn't feel like it.
I have a feeling episode, how many episodes are there? 8?
8.
I have a feeling like episode 6 and 7
will be 25.
But I really,
which ones did Favreau direct? Those are the ones that are going to have the most money.
I don't think he's directed a single one.
Oh, really? None of them? Oh, wow.
But I do, you know, as we're talking about it more, and I'm kind of like, because we literally watched it like 10 minutes ago, and I'm parsing through my feelings. I think that is something that actually excites me about this, because I do want a Star Wars television show.
Yeah.
And it's fine with me if that is not, again, TV and film are two different things. If this feels like a television show, great. I've never had a Star Wars television show. And another thing is, Dave Filoni really has a bead on pacing out moments in an episode. And like, I think that's what comes, like, that's where like his animation background comes in. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of like very like classical comedic beats that just like land in this. There's that, I'm thinking of that one shot where they both look at the like bazooka cannon to open the door.
Yeah.
And it's like, or IG-11. Shooting up and then someone falling behind it. Like, there are just like very subtle things that it's just like, that's just good pacing.
That's timing you get working 10 years on a cartoon.
Exactly. Knowing that like we have to get the timing right. Yeah. We can't just do another take. Like we have to storyboard this out and get it right.
Yeah.
And I think that that really comes through. And any kind of like, quote unquote, shortcomings he may have in terms of visual, like just literally framing and like staging, he could learn that. In two episodes, he might have that.
Because I think he directs episode 4 or 5.
Yeah, so I would almost bet money that we see a improvement on that. But
which is really exciting to kind of witness that, because we know he's such a talented guy, and to know that we're going to watch kind of the development of what will likely be a future feature Star Wars film director. I would be surprised if he doesn't
And he certainly will go on with this show.
Oh yeah.
So that'll only get better. I mean, yeah. We know that he's great at telling long form Star Wars.
How do we
stories.
Think this is gonna? I mean, I would imagine that eventually this is gonna become Filoni's show. I don't think Favreau's hanging around for six seasons in a movie.
Yeah, no, I would. I would think that Filoni will be show running. So it's like that's exciting because he clearly knows how to tell
which
long.
Probably it's just until he's done with Clone Wars, the final season of Clone Wars, and then maybe that
he'll
transition
take off his
happen.
Clone Wars cowboy hat and he'll put on his Mandalorian cowboy hat.
Before we get too deep in the Filoni conversation, I did want to talk about his roots in Pittsburgh and that article. We'll talk about that another time. But let's go around and just favorite moment. Hit me with your favorite moment from the episode. Chris, start with you.
Favorite moment. I think the introduction of IG-88 was great. It's classic.
IG-11.
1-1-88.
Tyka.
So, yeah. It's just classic droid action, like where the droid comes in. They're kind of silly. They're kind of dumb. They're mechanical. Also, they're playing on that we don't serve them here theme. Like Mandalorian is clearly on the side of I don't like droids. They creep me out. And now he's discovering they're not that bad. So that's great. We're seeing someone learn something.
For a couple minutes.
For a moment.
He'll be back.
A beat.
I think so.
He made an enemy in him, I'm sure.
Man, I'm torn, and this ties into. I did remember what I was going to say earlier. I'm going to go with my favorite beat or moment in the show was when they basically from when they introduced not Gary Busey. Not Gary Busey.
Nick Nolte's
character.
I mean,
we're going to do this one. We're going to go through and we're going to say the name of the character or the actor right
So Nick Nolte's character, who's this, you know, this, you know, native species from a planet. And
Ugnaught, I believe, right?
They're... Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're sort of meet cute in his like home. Through there's like a brief training montage that is clearly just riffing on like westerns and Rocky and the Rocky. It's cut very comedically, and I think that it's a great character. And I what this ties in is I think there are clear moments where you can distinguish. The really, really great performers in this elevate the show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nolte.
I think Nick Nolte is one. I think Nick Nolte literally delivers like a great performance.
I was shocked. I love
it.
And I think
obviously Werner Herzog.
The scene where he sends him off, that's when the show like locked in for me. When they're both standing on top of the mountain, ready to perform the heist or whatever. That to me locked it in. I was like, all right, we've got a puppet. Like character talking to a guy in a mask. I'm like, we're back in Star Wars.
It had that feeling of, and when I say the Dark Crystal, I'm trying to pinpoint what I mean, but it had that feeling of like truly otherworldly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like we are elsewhere. You know, like it's like we've been in Star Wars cantinas and things like that, but seeing them stand on like a mountaintop with a new creature that we've never seen before who has like a very defined personality had a feeling of like, oh, like we are in a different world. And that's,
And the sentiment that he had about this planet has been ravaged by these people. We haven't had peace since they arrived was a beautiful moment to me in the episode. Maybe one of my favorite parts of it, just that way that he expressed it and the way they wrote that scene. But it is classic Western.
Mm-hmm. It's classic Western.
Yeah. And even being on the hill looking down on it all.
It's also classic Filoni too. Like going back to like a lot of the episodes of Clone Wars, you know, you have a character who, you know, has a little more going on under the surface, and everybody's got that like edge of goodness to them where it's like the reason he's helping the Mandalorian is like for his people, but also he's like, I don't want you here either kind of a thing. It was delightful. Yeah. I thought Nolte's beats were my favorite parts of the episode.
My favorite moment was when IG-11 and the Mandalorian are stuck behind the pillar. I thought that their interplay was really funny.
Yeah.
I thought it was a very exciting moment. And I just thought, you know, the whole bit about the self-destruct was like really good. And
it was really good.
To me, that's when the show, you know, it's coming right off of Nick Nolte. That's when the Mandalorian character kind of came alive to me, where I was like, oh, this is someone that I want to follow.
He's got a personality.
You know, because I really did, and in the first 20 minutes, and even in all the promotional stuff, I wouldn't say fear, but I was just like, okay, it's just going to be this dude who like doesn't talk, he kind of mumbles, and like people speak at him and he stares at them until they give the answer.
And,
that he
and
wants.
Everyone's gonna be like, wow, that's such badass.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Cool.
And like, and yeah. in the first few minutes, that's what they gave. Yeah. But once we kind of saw him kind of vulnerable, not really knowing what to do, I thought that that kind of added a layer to him that was enough to keep me going. Yeah.
He's the one who wants to make a plan to go in, which is kind of antithetical to the character who's the tough, no-nonsense, like, badass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Normally, they're the ones who say,
"Yeah,
plan, you know, stuff your plan, we're going in.
Or and, he just wouldn't do anything. He wouldn't say anything,
right.
and then he'd just kill everybody and be in.
But that, I agree, Ryan, that was... It's Butch and Sundance.
Yeah,
they actually get some of that chemistry.
Well, then you have the chain gun there too. That's like right pulled out of the Wild Bunch. Like,
yeah,
it's like the whole scene is just like a complete.
Well, he's like, we're just gonna blast our way out of here.
Yeah,
I mean that's a moment in it.
Butch.
With him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, what about you?
Oddly enough, I didn't expect this, and maybe it's just because the entire scene was unexpected to me. I had heard rumors that there was a baby. And I never thought for a moment that we'd have the species of Yoda.
Which is crazy.
And it was, I don't know that it's actually the best part of the episode, but it really just surprised me so much and has me so intrigued. And are we going to learn more now about what Yoda's species is? Are we going to find out that this is a descendant of Yoda related to Yoda? Like, what is going to happen? There's also, we have not gotten any indication that the Force is involved in The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. The Mandalorian is a show we think is just about bounty hunting. But now we have a young species of Yoda. I don't know how else to describe it at this point because we don't know anything else.
Yoda baby.
Yoda baby, who's 50
baby.
Years old.
Yoda baby.
Yoda which is baby. What says the first 100
not the
years.
Not the mama, Yoda baby.
not the mama.
But so do we have 200 years as a toddler? Is that what we're finding out about what happens with the species?
Well, it would make sense that the Empire is after them to eradicate any kind of Jedi.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Well, but then, exactly.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think they would know. They're going to eradicate any other Jedi because they're maybe well aware of what Luke Skywalker did at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah,
they don't want to see any of the rise.
They're still hunting Jedi.
So does that put, like, Yoda at, like, around 18 when he was, like, 900
years
old? He's, like, 50. If 50 is still a baby...
But in their lifespan, though, they die at their version of 18.
Ooh,
that's
dark.
I have to say, speaking on that, also, I would say my second favorite moment is the Mandalorian reaching out his finger
for
the baby. Because it was very funny.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very unexpected. And I was like, oh, that's not who I thought the character was. And that
it's such personality.
It was like this very... It just really threw me for a loop in terms of who the character may be.
Well, and also that he would take out IG-11, you know, not he tried to negotiate with him, and then he takes him out, and
because I had also heard that there was a baby, and I was imagining it would be this kind of thing where he was like, like, what do I do?
Yeah.
I don't want to have this baby.
Yeah.
I mean, we might still get some of that.
But. Yeah, but like up front, I was expecting more of this, like, he wants to get rid of the baby, but he feels kind of conflicted because it's cute, like whatever it is. But it was like he immediately was like, no, we're not going to like murder the baby.
Yeah.
Well, and think about the leap that they made with Star Wars here. And I wonder if somebody was, you know, the story group or Dave Filoni was making the push. No, it's not a human baby. We're not going to have everybody try to relate to this as a human family.
Yeah.
Right.
To go with an alien species that is very cute.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
It's flat out green gizmo.
Yeah, but it really is. But it's just a nice call because I feel like it's just unexpected and a new way for them to go with the story.
Exactly.
But I love, maybe I'm just a sucker for it, but I love a fake blaster moment or a fake fake shot where you think the shot has gone one way and it turns out it's the other.
It always works. It's always effective. Even intellectually knowing what happened, like you still are engaged like cinematically with those moments. Also, I mean, I think the whole, so the setup, you know, is that Werner Herzog can only give him limited information about the target. Werner Herzog is the person who hires him for the job. And, you know, what we know a location and we know that the target is 50 years old. And so it's such a great setup. Like you initially, when you see that it's a small pod, that it's likely a baby.
Yeah.
You think, oh, Werner Herzog's a liar.
Yeah.
But the reveal of a way that it actually makes sense for a 50-year-old to still be an infant or a baby, it's like
it's great. They get to have their cake and eat it too. It works for the reveal. Like it was fun, I thought.
Yeah. It's so much to also ponder on because when they first said a 50-year-old, I thought, oh, all right, well, who from the canon would be 50-year-olds at this
time?
They
did pull a fast one. I mean, like that was completely unexpected.
But then also think, at 50 years old, we, even though the galaxy is so much older than we know it to be in the movies we've seen, but we imagine that everyone still ages and 50 years old for a human year is still the same.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So 50 years old, this Yoda baby was around when Yoda was still alive. Because obviously he died in Return of the Jedi.
Right, which that whole... I also like that with the finger touch, it's almost like a little bit of an E.T. call out. It's just the finger touch. Which we do know, Ryan, that Yoda calls the E.T. planet home. Or E.T. calls the Yoda planet home. Ugh. So I'm just saying.
You mean
from the fan fiction that you wrote? God. Is that what you're referencing?
No, about
I'm just dialing the Halloween. Shall we replay that moment?
No, we've already done that once on the pod.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know. Dig back if you're listening. If you're new to the pod, I don't know. Go back like 65 episodes ago when this came up.
Just to be safe, listen to them all.
Yeah, do it all, and then listen to them again backwards.
It was so surprising to see. First off, there's very little known about Yoda's species. There is another Yoda-like creature called Yaddle that sits on the Jedi Council.
In episode one? Was it episode two or three?
I don't even know. One of those. And to see...
Oh, boy. We are a Star Wars podcast, believe it or not, people.
We'll get there. But to see another Yoda, it's a pretty bold move, I would think, though. Because that's like...
It's a big swing.
Like visually, that's Yoda so defined that I would think they'd be very hesitant to introduce anything that would look near Yoda.
Well, and also it's a Yoda baby who is not around other of the species. Yeah. Is it going to learn how to speak like Yoda? Or is it going to learn how to speak like any other?
This is a challenge, actually, I think, though. It's funny, but I do think like that's a challenge that we're never going to get the answer unless this series moves beyond Pedro Pascal's Mandalorian. If this show goes six seasons in a movie and it takes place over 10 years of this man's life, that baby's still a baby. It's still the same age.
Oh, like,
that's nothing in their life. So I think this is going to be the season one arc or a chunk of the season one arc. And I think it probably has to get resolved just because
that's fair
for us to get more info on. Now here's where it could come up. We may see this character in Rise of Skywalker, which would be, you know, as a tween.
Right.
I thought a little bit that we were maybe going to see Rey as a baby. You know, as we were closing in on that shot, I was like, ooh, is this going to show us
Rey? Oh, baby Rey. That's
a little baby with three ponytails. Unless they put a little helmet on the baby and we find out that the baby is the true Mandalorian.
Or it could be that Rey goes back in time and plants the baby there.
Oh,
maybe
in
Yoda,
part three of episode nine.
Exactly. Maybe Yoda was the baby's looper. We can go through with it.
There is another was referring to this baby.
There you go. There is another.
Is Yoda Phoenix like?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, we don't know.
Is that, I think you said that. You know, that's another. There's a question of like, you know, could we see something interesting and like really radical that it's regenerative?
Well,
or something.
By the way, I do want to say, everybody's saying how this feels like the original trilogy.
It does,
which I disagree with.
I agree with you.
I'm glad that
it doesn't need to be. It doesn't have.
Also,
to
Also, it doesn't take place during the original trilogy. So, like,
no,
stop. Yeah. It should feel more like the new trilogy.
Yeah.
On the note of how it feels, I think a big part of it is one of my other favorite elements that I don't know we'd get to otherwise. The music is
it's phenomenal.
Awesome. And it's a big departure from John Williams in any way, shape, or form. And I think they were really smart to do that because if you do small screen Williams, it's going to sound like a knockoff. Mm. You know, there's like two guys who can
Giacchino.
Do anything.
Yeah.
Giacchino and I don't know who else I have, but like who can do that.
And none of us talk enough about how great the score was for Rogue One, and he had to pull that together in a second because he was given that job last minute. Anyway, sorry.
So this gives the show such a mood, such an identity, such a feeling throughout, and I found myself frequently like I'm going to listen to it. If it's out, I'm going to try and listen to it at work tomorrow. Like the scoring.
It is available.
It's
I love it. I really like it. I like that it's different. And I think it contributes to that feel of being like, yeah, we're in a different adjacent thing. And nobody's going to mistake this for not Star Wars.
Yeah.
But also, like, get out of here with that.
If you're going to make a Star Wars show, make it a, make your, do, this is what else are we doing here?
Yeah.
If we're
just
making the same stuff over and over again. It takes place in the world. It feels like Star Wars, but different.
It also has that kind of soundtrack that, and I mean this in a good way, that's like, sometimes I think Star Wars will kind of round its edges a little too much to cater to mass audiences. Like, make it a little bit like a, one of these like sci-fi shows that you see.
Yeah,
like, that has that kind of soundtrack and that weirdness.
Please, put a barrier of entry so I could feel special.
Right, exactly. Like, I don't mind a little bit of a like a kind of a curve where people are like, this isn't for me, this is too weird.
Give me something to overlook.
Keep Star Wars weird, people.
Yeah.
the Star Trek and Firefly comparisons are great. And like, I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see something very reminiscent, you know, that's like Battlestar-esque. Like, all these shows that have obviously, excluding Star Trek, the other shows owe so much to Star Wars. And it's interesting to see the sort of Ouroboros coming back and Snake eating its own tail of, like, now they're influencing the culture that influenced them and spawned them. And he, you know, Favreau, Filoni, whoever is diving in, they've decided that the Mandalorian is clearly like, this is the Western arm of, like, when Lucas was inspired by Westerns. I would love to see an equally strong, equally departive look on the Obi-Wan series that's diving into the samurai influences.
Yeah.
And they just, like, if we have just two wildly different takes of a similar period,
that's
phenomenal. I couldn't be more excited. And I think there's room for it.
I do have this fear of people being like, Star Wars is a Western, and just making everything a Western, you know?
No, And now, obviously, Kurosawa was influenced by and deeply influenced Western cinema. But, like, go back to samurai movies. Go back to, like, silent.
I mean, those were
quiet,
the primary influence.
Yeah.
I mean, Hidden Fortress and Throne of Blood were the influences.
Yeah. And Jimbo and,
And so the fact that you've got your Bush and Sundance over here with Mandalorian, I'd love to see the other side of the coin.
What is the genre of a loner hermit who doesn't do anything and barely speaks? Because that's what we want in the Obi-Wan series. And what's the genre referencing? We got to figure that out. I'm sure there's some film series that's about a depressed loner, right?
I mean, there's so many there's so many samurai movies just about the old forgotten samurai.
That's perfect.
That's wandering from village to village, like Zatoichi, the blind samurai, is like rooted in that.
Well, I mean, they could. I mean, there's also an.
I think
like,
they
there's
said
a chance
the
for like a lone.
Will be mostly based on the Joker.
There's a there's like a lone wolf and cub option if they decide to bring Luke back into his life that they could totally do. Just like have Obi-Wan wander around with his baby for a while.
And you know what? Some people think it's like a tragedy, but I think it's a comedy. Is that the Joker movie? Did they say that?
Is that right? I have no idea. I haven't seen it.
I'm sure they do.
The Mandalorian's backstory, we had hints. We had a moment in what I, when you talked about he went down to the Mandalorian whatever area, I was watching. I was like, this is Mandalore Cave? Is
that
a cave?
Very interesting.
Such a big surprise.
Yeah.
Really cool. I had no expectation of seeing any other Mandalorian in this series.
I thought he was a lone wolf,
But then I love seeing the kids running around with helmets on.
Yeah.
You know, clearly they have to resize those helmets as they grow.
That's why they're going to get a helmet for the little with little ear holes.
What if they're all
little green ear holes?
Yeah, I was going to say, what if they're all little Yodas in those helmets?
But he
I'm telling you, don't feed that Yoda after midnight.
I never understood that. What time can you stop feeding them water?
Look, it's not Eastern Standard.
What if you're on a plane?
Well, what is the end time, though? Is it
international
morning?
Waters. What are you going to do?
Chris,
what are
you know
do?
It is
you're
funny.
In the water, so you got
you're
problems
the first
there.
Person to bring this up. I don't know.
Really?
No, they talk about it in the sequel of that movie.
Oh, they do? I've never seen the sequel.
Wait, you've never seen the sequel?
No.
Oh, the sequel is better.
What's it called?
It's way better. Wait, you haven't even seen it. Have you seen
the sequel's called Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Gremlins 2, Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
No, I didn't know that.
Have you seen the Key and Peele sketch?
No.
Oh, it's great. It's about pitching the movie Gremlins 2 and just making it crazier and crazier and crazier.
That was insane.
One. It's one
That's
of the
hilarious.
Craziest
There's a sequel
awesome
to Gremlins?
Movie.
What's it called?
This is a good
Pulse Fiction.
But we learn about his family, or that he had a family. And it's just very brief shots as they're reforming his armor out of the credit that he got.
In a very cheesily edited
which
montage.
Is like, I know.
Oh,
I thought that would, I know.
I liked it.
I liked
how cheesy it was.
I didn't like how cheesy it was. Didn't like that it was there. Wow. Didn't like seeing it. This was like the only part I didn't like it.
I liked the idea that they were putting forth visually, though I don't know if it was completely successful, that the Mandalorian culture is so strong and so associated with that steel and with the armor that and every time they forged it, that he was seeing a piece of his past.
Yeah.
Which was, I don't, again, know the lore of Mandalore.
Me either.
But
I believe there's a moment where the Empire comes in and takes over the planet.
Yes.
Right.
And I think that's what that scene is referencing.
I feel that with that scene that it was, it did feel differently and kind of cheesy, but I think it's like hearkening to the fanfare, and they show the interspersed cuts of his past, but I think it's supposed to be very like literal and guttural and showing almost like in Lord of the Rings when they show like the dwarves like smashing the rings. Like I think it's calling back to that era, and that's why it felt a little out of place, because it's like they're trying to rebuild their past from this. I think it's cool and empowering that they're taking the money that the Empire stole from them, using it to build armor only to kill the Empire again.
I really liked...
Love it.
I liked this underground world. I liked the forge. I liked that they hand forge their armor.
Yeah.
So that, like when you wouldn't assume that that's how it's done in this culture. Mm-hmm. I guess they used a machine. It was both handmade and machined, which was cool. What I didn't like was the flashback elements, and I think it has to do... Ryan, I actually like your read of it, the idea of the imprint of the armor calling back his culture because of the strong association. That's beautiful. What I didn't like is, like, again, it's too tropey. It's
the execution was
an orphan.
Yeah.
No kidding. Like, every other hero like this, you know, a wayward son, like, wouldn't it be more surprising and more cool if it was revealed that, like, he was doing this because he was caring for his parents and his own family and had like deep, you know, like, I don't know.
Or just, if he like went back, there's an episode or season three where he like goes back home and his parents are like, oh, Bubba.
Also surprising.
They're like super, super supportive.
I'm here for it. But I don't know. Just, I think the eye roll for me was literally, I have seen that exact montage. I've seen that sound editing, and I've seen the story of, his parents were killed, so that's why he does what he does, and why is it like... It's like...
Did you tell me you're not a fan of Batman's origin story, or...
There it is.
Oh boy.
I do like that it... I felt it, in some ways, echoed what we learned in Skyfall about the deaths of...
That's also... There it is.
Andrew.
But that's also... That is a trope of Western movies, though.
Andrew Bond and... something Delacroix Bond. I can't remember his mom's first name.
You can literally say any two names.
The Hackett brothers lost their mother and their father at different times, but it's an origin
story. Plane crashes? That's wild.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to work in that business.
Sam, you went through it. I think we've heard your least favorite moment. I want to just quickly touch on maybe the thing that didn't work for all of us. My least favorite moment, and I think this is something that really didn't work for me in The Force Awakens as well. I don't like when the first bit of dialogue is alien language. It feels off to me because I'm trying to get into it, and then I hear an actor speaking in a different language where it just pulls me out because I know they had to work really hard to get that. Mm-hmm. Like,
it pulled me out in this for sure.
We see Rey for the first time, and Rey goes,
"Torama parqua."
There you go. Thank you. I was trying to get to it, and Chris had it ready for me. Love it.
We got to start doing this as a video podcast.
But I think the reason why I always feel
that
way...
I want to be clear, that's not the first line of the movie, though.
No. Siri is very much interested in you repeating that, Chris.
Tomama Paqua. She's...
Neither does Tito.
She says it with like a different accent, too.
But it's not the first.
That's just Tito.
But you're right. It's not the first bit of dialogue in the movie. But in my mind, I was so looking forward to seeing what this new lead character was going to do for her to start in a different language. It just kind of makes me go, I don't know.
Yeah.
And we started this with someone in a different language, and he wasn't bad. But that for me, and I don't think that's that bad. It doesn't ruin anything for it. That was my least favorite part.
Yeah. I think for me, it also comes at the beginning. Just the, and I'll pick on it visually. Just the in video games, they add a lot of fog. It means they're hiding stuff. The kind of like the snowy bland shot. It was very bland looking. Everything looked very like just dull.
Yeah.
And I think just I like the idea of those things pulling up, but I just not a fan of that shot. Like that kind of iconography of just like a desert lake with just gray around it because it looked just like boring.
It was cool though when the speeders did pop out of the gray and then pop back in. I like that.
It's a neat idea, but it just made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I like the ice. I would just jump in. I did feel like the ice was a little new. It wasn't Hoth. It wasn't a snow planet. It was like once again another like environmental space to be in. That this felt like it could have very easily been a desert.
Yeah,
a little bit. It might be box ticking, but I agree with you that visually it maybe was a little flat, weaker.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a cool. I thought it was cool.
Hmm. I didn't like how toxic some of the fan base got.
Oh, boy.
You know? I didn't love that he chopped a dude in half in the first 5 minutes of the show.
I think he thought he could have gotten away.
Yeah, I don't even mind that he did it.
No,
The pacing, speaking of pacing, I thought the pacing of that, it was better in the trailers.
Yeah. Like, no, I agree,
And like, to be fair, trailers are trailers, so it's like maybe we need to see, but it just like, it felt like four beats too long where he was like pulling him the guy, like it just felt
Then we saw the same scene twice, like then they showed with the credit thing again, like there was it's like they showed the same
action. It also felt like that scene felt like, I'm sure it was one of the earliest scenes that was written. I'm sure it was written with the intent of this is going to be...
We're going to show this at Comic-Con.
This is the introduction of this character, of this show, of this series, of what we're doing,
of the tone.
What are
you saying? This is the most Favreau of all the scenes?
It's a little bit, it's a little bit overwritten. It's a little bit clunky, and it feels like it's a little bit of like forcing a statement. It's like, it's a statement piece, and the show gets better. I don't know what to call it. I keep calling it. It's the Butch and Sundance moment where they're pinned down.
Yeah.
That scene is so much better and hits the tone that it almost... It feels like that's where it's like, oh, this is what the show wants to be.
Yeah.
And that opening scene is what...
It wasn't earned
is how you kind of got there. You had to work through that, but you also were like, it's a great moment. It's going to kick off the show. Yeah. And it feels
just,
like it.
The show is just kind of slow to start, but that's all right. They gave us the goods later.
Real quickly, anything that we have not talked about that you really loved? I kind of love that IG-11 felt a little stop motion to me. Just the way that he moved.
The movement was really,
it was
really
cool. It was very clever.
Very cool how he moved around killing people too.
Yeah, I was excited to see how his face was going to move and react to stuff. And like, were those his eyes? Is that his eye? Like, I kind
of
like
that. I'm really curious about this idea of bounty droids. Cause we haven't established that like droids, they haven't established apart from L3 who touches on this in Solo. But this idea of like autonomous droids, like does he have an apartment? You know, what is he?
Yeah. Does he? What does he do with the money?
No, but there was some reference to if he was killed, it was like his owners wanted him to self destruct because he couldn't be captured.
Is that what he's saying? That
I thought that's
owners,
what he said.
I
he may not have said owners, but someone wouldn't allow him to be captured.
I'm 100% for droid liberation and autonomy. Like, I think that
we are on this podcast.
Droids are fully sentient and should have their own apartments, but I am unclear in the world how that works.
In Brooklyn or Manhattan?
Oh yeah.
I'd say on that opening scene, the language note. I've read so much about it, so I'm spoiled. I don't love subtitles in Star Wars. Which is like, it goes back to the Han Greedo scene, but also it's like that scene didn't actually need it because literally after the guy says, "You spilled my drink" twice in another language, the bartender says, "He says you spilled his drink." And it's like, this was never meant to be subbed.
Yeah.
Don't sub it. Like it. So that like was a small annoyance to me about that specific scene.
I don't know what keep the alien language. Just don't subtitle it.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know what you mean. I really need to know what Majunki means.
No, it feels weird and it feels like, who is this for? You know, like we get what's going on.
Yeah.
And in fact, you could have tightened up that scene because you wouldn't have needed a full conversation between those guys.
Exactly, you know? What I mean. They showed the same thing two times. Like, we get that he's angry. We get...
I don't know. I mean, Star Wars is for kids, and I think sometimes kids would just be really confused, and especially in this day and age.
He just chopped a man in half.
Yeah.
It's not for kids?
I like the return of the land speeders. I thought that was great. Yeah. And I like that he didn't... Again, we've established that we mentioned that the Mandalorian has at least some level of mistrust of droids, I think possibly because maybe he's seen them corrupted by the Empire. Maybe that's a reason, you know. But I like that it's like the self-driving speeder that's got a droid pilot.
So sad.
He like didn't.
He was like baked in.
He didn't take it, but it was great to see both. It was great to see the classic. You
the
know,
sound
speeder
design
tech.
Was so great on that at the moment though. It made me like the light hum of the speeder and the R2 unit astronaut droid.
Yeah. Put some of those sound effects in. Especially the sound of the carbonite freeze. We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah. Oh,
that was so cool. Like, it's so cool that the technology got portable and you could put it in your ship.
It's portable technology.
Yeah. It was a prototype in Empire.
And now that they've proved it, it seems to be the chosen method for bounty hunters.
Yeah. Did Boba patent that before he died and his family's really reaping the benefits?
Yeah, of course. It's the Boba method.
I think
you have to imagine that perhaps Boba Fett was part of the Mandalorian clubhouse and shared his experience.
But he wasn't a Mandalorian.
You're right.
But he could have. But he could have passed.
But he might. Well, but he his might father not, was.
They never take off their helmets.
He? Yeah, I was gonna say.
Was I guess this is worth looking
I
into.
I don't think his father.
Jango
was.
Fett was not a Mandalorian.
No, I don't believe he was. He stole the armor.
But maybe that could be the secrets of the Mandalorians, or that they're trying. They don't have an actual like heritage to it. There, it's
do
just
they
like
say
a
that
way
in
of
clones?
Life.
Or is it?
I
like,
don't remember.
Is it just canon?
I thought it might have been just canon outside.
Interesting.
Of
that. Okay, I'm gonna look into this.
I don't remember. Yeah. We have Disney Plus to be able to go back and watch it. But do we think that, and this is, you know, probably going to be answered, do we think that he's never had full Mandalorian armor, been building his own Mandalorian armor because he's been off-world, and he's slowly putting together his entire actual Beskar, is that what it was called, armor, and all the other stuff has been placeholders to try to feel like he was back and part of his family.
Oh, interesting.
I think they don't have enough of it. I think what is in the date of the show, like modern Mandalorian armor, is made of other materials, and it's a patchwork, and I think that's what they're all working
with.
But
so he didn't have an original, though, because he was too young when he was taken from Mandalore, so he never got like an original.
Yeah, but maybe it's like a rite of passage. I don't really know much about
it. It's either
a
rite of passage, or I think it maybe fulfills some kind of prophecy.
Either way, like, this is ripe for a video game, and it is such like just leveling up that I was like, I want to do this. I want to go play Dragon Quest and forge. I want to forge a new sword tonight, you know?
That's make sure you return with a full Mandalorian set.
Then you can enter the castle. Yeah.
But first, I need you to get me three fawners.
What was the name of that creature? A berg? Blurg?
Oh, yeah, blurg.
A thurg?
Wait, a blurg,
a thurg.
I thought it was a blurg.
I thought it was a blurg.
Well, we'll go back to the
canon. This has been the droids.
Wikipedia has probably got it. I got to say, wasn't there another moment where they had a very unimaginative word for something? We all laughed. I can't remember what it was. Kind of an unobtainium moment.
Oh, it was the myth creature.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, mythosaur.
Mythosaur.
The mythosaur.
Which I believe is what he rides.
You rode the mythosaur myth?
Special. Yeah.
Yeah. And as Chris said, of course, that's the actual thing he rides in the holidays.
They say it's just a triceratops.
Well, this has been our episode one of The Mandalorian instant reaction, review, analysis. All
nice
right
socks,
here.
Mike. Whoa,
thank you.
You're
I'm
wearing...
rocking the Rebel insignia on my socks here. Gotta be ready when you're... And Chris over here has got a nice Rogue One shirt on.
I've seen it before.
But I will say this has been just a pleasure. I mean, we experienced a Star Wars TV show together, and I'll never forget it.
Pleasure and
guys,
an honor.
It's the new world.
Sure is.
Disney Plus. Get it while it's hot.
Yep.
Just part one of this week, because this week we got Jedi Fallen Order, episode 2 on Friday. I got to say, if none of you want to join me on another pod on talking about episode 2, I'm doing it. I can't stop talking about this show. I'm so excited. Email us, droidspod@gmail.com. Twitter, droidspod. Instagram, droidspod. Droids Podcast on Facebook. Let us know what you thought of episode 1. We want to hear from you. We will read your emails on this podcast. We will get your info out there. We want to hear from you.
Address, phone number.
But this has been...
Routing number.
Just send us your rabbit gun.
But this has been the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast.
What they throw? Mandalorian?
Blurg.
Blurg.
Wait, is Liz Lemon coined the teacher?
I don't know how they back it.
That sounds no different than one of those clocks that go gong, 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 gong.
It is different.
Gong, 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 gong. Chocolate.
Wait, Chris, I missed that. Can you do it again?
Gong, 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 gong.
I remember like sleeping over at people's houses that had those clocks.
This is all being recorded.
Gong, gong, gong.
I remember like
at the end of the pod.
Okay. I remember going to like someone's house and like having a sleepover, and they had one of those clocks, just being like, "What is this?
Why do you want to be awake?
It's one in the morning.
Why do you want to be? Why do you want to be? Grandfather clock, but they had a mantle clock.
We had a cuckoo clock. I'm pretty sure my dad ripped all the gears out of because it's like every hour it's called cuckoo, cuckoo. We used to mess with it all the time.
What's your mom's name?
That's it, Veronica.
He was like, "God damn it, Ronnie,
get that clock out of here!" And then we kept throwing it away, and it kept coming back. It was really weird.